Well, good evening. And where are we? Wendy, you led the discussion last week. Did you do constancy?
We did. So communication on page 86.
All right. Ritu, you want to begin?
Sure. Communication. Without any intentional, fancy way of adjusting yourself, to express yourself as you are is the most important thing. Communication is very important in Zen practice. Because I cannot speak your language very well, I'm always seeking some way of communicating with you. I think that this kind of effort will result in something very good. We say that if you do not understand your master's words, you are not his disciple. To understand your master's words, or your master's language, is to understand your master himself. And when you understand him, you find his language is not just ordinary language, but language in its wider sense. Through your master's language, you understand more than what his words actually say.
When we say something, our subjective intention or situation is always involved. So there is no perfect word. Some distortion is always present in the statement. But nevertheless, through our master's statement, we have to understand objective fact itself, the ultimate fact. By ultimate fact, we do not mean something eternal or something constant. We mean things as they are in each moment. You may call it being or reality.
To understand reality is direct experience, is the reason we practice all Zen, and the reason we study Buddhism. In the study of Buddhism, you will understand your human nature, your intellectual faculty, and the truth present in your human activity. And you can take this human nature of yours into consideration when you seek to understand reality. But only by the actual experience of Zen can you experience reality directly and understand in the true sense the various statements made by your teacher or by Buddha. In a strict sense, it is not possible to speak about reality. Nevertheless, if you are a Zen student, you have to understand it directly through your master's words.
The Master's direct statement may not be only in words. His behavior is likewise his way of expressing himself. In Zen, we put emphasis on demeanor or behavior, but by behavior, we do not mean a particular way that you ought to behave, but rather the natural expression of yourself. We emphasize straightforwardness. You should be true to your feelings and to your mind. Express yourself without any reservations. This helps the listener to understand more easily.
When you listen to someone, you should give up all your preconceived ideas and your subjective opinions. You should just listen to him, just observe what his way is. We put very little emphasis on right and wrong or good and bad. We just see things as they are with him and accept them. This is how we communicate with each other. Usually, when you listen to some statement, you hear it as a kind of echo of yourself. You are actually listening to your own opinion. If it agrees with your opinion, you may accept it, but if it does not, you will reject it, or you may not even really hear it. That is one danger when you listen to someone. The other danger is to be caught by the statement. If you do not understand your master's statement in its true sense, you will easily be caught by something which is involved in your subjective opinion or by some particular way the statement is expressed. You will take what he says only as a statement without understanding the spirit behind the words. This kind of danger is always there.
It is difficult to have good communication between parents and children because parents always have their own intentions. Their intentions are nearly always good. The way they speak or the way they express themselves is often not so free. It is usually too one-sided and not realistic. We each have our own way of expressing ourselves, and it is difficult to change that way according to the circumstances. If parents can manage to express themselves in various ways according to their each situation, there will be no danger in the education of their children. This, however, is rather difficult. Even a Zen master has his own way. When Nishiari Zenji scolded his disciples, he always said, "Go away!" One of his students took him literally and left the temple. But the master did not mean to expel the student. It was just his way of expressing himself. Instead of saying, "Be careful," he said, "Go away!" If your parents have this kind of habit, you will easily misunderstand them. This danger is always present in your everyday life. So as a listener or a disciple, it is necessary to clear your mind of these various distortions. A mind full of preconceived ideas, subjective intentions, or habits is not open to things as they are. That is why we practice Zazen, to clear our mind of what is related to something else.
To be quite natural to ourselves, and also to follow what others say or do in the most appropriate way, is quite difficult. If we try to adjust ourselves intentionally in some way, it is impossible to be natural. If you try to adjust yourself in a certain way, you will lose yourself. So without any intentional fancy way of adjusting yourself, to express yourself freely as you are is the most important thing to make yourself happy and to make others happy. You will acquire this kind of ability in practicing Zazen. Zen is not some fancy special art of living. Our teaching is just to live, always in reality, in its exact sense. To make our effort, moment after moment, is our way. In an exact sense, the only thing we actually can study in our life is that on which we are working in each moment. We cannot even study Buddha's words. To study Buddha's words in their exact sense means to study them through some activity, which you face moment after moment. So, we should be concentrated with our full mind and body on what we do, and we should be faithful, subjectively and objectively, to ourselves, and especially to our feelings. Even when you do not feel so well, it is better to express how you feel without any particular attachment or intention. So you may say, "Oh, I am sorry, I do not feel well." That is enough. You should not say, "You may be so." That is too much. You may say, "Oh, I am sorry, I am so angry with you." There is no need to say that you are not angry when you are angry. You should just say, "I am angry." That is enough.
True communication depends upon our being straightforward with one another. Zen masters are very straightforward. If you do not understand the reality directly through your master's words, he may use his staff on you. "What is it?" he may say. Our way is very direct. But this is not actually Zen, you know. It is not our traditional way, but when we want to express it, we find it easier sometimes to express it in this way. But the best way to communicate may be just to sit without saying anything. Then you will have the full meaning of Zen. When I use my staff on you until I lose myself, or until I die, still it will not be enough. The best way is just to sit.
I had a very interesting experience this afternoon. I can't remember. I guess it must have been before Christmas when a nun, a Soto Zen nun from Moscow, wrote to me. I sent that email to some of you, I think, requesting donations so that they could put on a sesshin in May. And I shared her email with various people, and then I couldn't deal with it because I was going away. And when I came back, I was getting ready to go away again. So it wasn't until this morning that I went to the bank with the form that she had sent me with her bank numbers, but the whole thing was in Russian. and there was nobody in my bank who knew Russian. So I was going to give her some of my Dana that I got at Jikoji, and then I couldn't do it. So I told the teller that I would go home and email Moscow and ask them to translate the form so that I know what numbers they needed. And I got back to my internet connection, and there she was, saying somebody had donated space for them so they don't have to rent space. Somebody else had donated a large piece of money so they don't need any money at all. Thank you very, very much. Please come and visit us in Moscow. We would love to see you. Here is our website, and here is our teacher, and gave me all the information, so I looked it up. And one of the first things, well, they have, one of the things they have is teachings. And first thing is a talk by Koto Sawaki. And the talk is so much like this one, it's just, it kind of amazed me. He's saying the same thing. Be yourself, be straightforward. It's Zen isn't about the words, but you have to use words. It was just all laid out. And I was so touched to know that they're there, in freezing cold Moscow, also in St. Petersburg and Samara. There are three groups, Soto Zen in our lineage, in our tradition, in Russia. Also in France, they come through Deshi Maru, who was one of Koto Sawaki's students. And Deshi Maru ordained this man who is Polish, I believe, their Roshi. Very nice looking guy. And his talks are on there, and Deshi Maru's talks are on there. It was, anyway, I wanted you all to know that. And what she said in her email today was, don't worry about us, we're fine, and it was very good for us to have to do this ourselves, to deal with the difficulty. It was good for the Sangha to have this, to take responsibility for it ourselves. Which is absolutely right. That's how it works. Once the Sangha gets energy generated, then the whole thing becomes much more connected and much more one body. So communication. Wow, the email, internet is still blows my mind. I just can't get over it. How just with a gesture, we reach across the whole world that way. We're right inside each other. Makes me want to go to Moscow and go and sit with them. And I told her, please come to California. We would welcome them to come and visit with us.
So the website's in English?
Yeah, if you click the British flag.
Okay.
And I meant to bring the website. It's his name, K-K-K-San, K-E-I-S-A-N, I think it is. And a lot of the websites show you from Google in Russian, in Cyrillic, that you can't even read. But there's one that gives it in English, and you can get it that way. Yeah, it's very cool. So I think this is one of the most important chapters in this book. We talk about communication all the time. In this culture, we are communicating up to here and up to here. I mean, it's too much. I mean, the internet is too much. In another sense, it's just overwhelming. We know too much about too many things and not enough in any depth. And yet, learning how to listen, learning how to truly be with someone else and suspend our own point of view and our own opinion long enough to take the other person's opinion in, is what Suzuki Roshi is talking about. We're so eager to present our own. We're so eager to protect ourselves with our own opinions. If we're challenged, then it feels like our whole being in some way, our whole identity is being challenged, if our ideas are challenged. It takes a whole extra kind of squeeze of the brain to realize that our opinions are just opinions. They're just ideas. And ideas are a dime a dozen. Some of them are precious and we cherish them. Some of them are cheap. Some are just ridiculous. How we use our discriminating mind to sort those out starts with being willing to suspend them all in order to take in somebody else's, not just their ideas, but what, where they come from. What causes someone to say what she says? Is it conditioning? Is it prejudice? Is it secret anger and dismay? It could be many, many different things. But if we want to really understand, if we really know each other, then we have to listen. We have to really tune in to where the so-called other is coming from. Tell me your truth. And then be willing to share our truth. Not our idea about our truth, not even our ideas, but just, as he says, in a straightforward way, just be who we are. We get to be so threatening for each other because we do such funny, wiggly things in our way of meeting. We're not quite upright about it. It always feels a little chancy. It is a little chancy. We might come up to somebody who punches in the nose if we're too straightforward. We don't know. That's why we listen first. So we can be tactful, careful, self-protective, but open and honest. To understand reality as a direct experience is the reason we practice Zazen and the reason we study Buddhism. Only by the actual practice of Zen can you experience reality directly and understand in their true sense the various statements made by your teacher or by Buddha. This is why I always encourage you to sit. We get in such tangles. And often people will come to me and say, oh, this happened and that happened and I don't know what to do and it's terrible. And the best advice I know to give for almost every situation is just to sit with it. To allow it to be what it is. At least as the first step in dealing with whatever it is. The mind of Zazen is so big. And our everyday mind gets pretty narrow. We don't realize how narrow it is until we bump up against the edges sometimes. You should be true to your feelings and to your mind. Expressing yourself without any reservations, this helps the listener to understand more easily. I just got an email from someone who asked me how to get rid of the self. And I wrote back something like this, that you should be true to your feelings and straightforward. You don't get rid of yourself. You see through yourself. And you become more and more yourself. You fulfill in every moment this constantly changing bundle of energies that we call myself. There's nothing to get rid of. There's the whole thing to live, and to live fully and completely. Our teaching is just to live, always in reality, in its exact sense. Just to live. Are there questions? Jane?
Well, that sentence about this is Zen to see reality directly. Or, no, Zen is the way to see. Only through Zen can we see reality directly.
Mm-hmm.
I believe is what he says. What does Zen mean?
Zazen.
Zazen.
Yeah. He doesn't mean some belief system or some religious ideal or anything like that. He just means Zazen. I don't know why he said Zen and not Zazen.
It troubles me a little bit, and maybe this is one of the limitations of speech, to mean something that's excluding other things. And so that does trouble me a little bit, thinking of what Coben tells us, don't think when you come back from Zazen, you're the only one practicing. There are so many ways of, and surely Zazen is not the only way of seeing reality directly.
Well, maybe that's, yes, you're right. You're right. In that sense, it's certainly true.
So that, to get at the intent of what he's saying, it makes me wonder, what does he mean by Zazen, by Zen?
Well, I would say that, how can I say this? That everyone is an expression of Buddha nature. But not everyone is aware of it. And so as we come back from Zazen, having wakened up a bit to Buddha nature, we are careful not to take the man in the street, I guess, ordinary people who haven't been sitting Zazen, as not having been practicing, not being an expression of Buddha nature. But we practice in order to wake up to it, wake up to the nature of us and everything. often the man on the street doesn't know about Buddha nature at all, his own so-called, or anybody else's. And so that's the kind of limitation that I was talking about. Without that understanding, we don't really know where we are or who we are. And that's what Roshi is talking about. If we experience ourselves in Zazen, then we know who we are and who everybody else is also.
And also someone like Antonio Porcia, was it? Or Mr. Porcia, the poet?
Antonio Porcia, yes. Porcia. Yes.
He wasn't a Zen man, and yet his expression indicated, all that you read from him last week, is that his expression indicated that he had seen Buddha nature in his way.
Yes. Yes.
So Zazen is not the only way to see. It's a great way, but not the only way.
Well, we don't know what Porcia's practice was. He lived alone. All we can know is ourself. So if we try to see what other people's experience is, we can't really know. But we can know our experience, and from our experience, understand others. I would expect that Porcia had a great deal of experience in sitting, though he didn't call it Zen, just from the kind of wisdom that came through. But it was also very limited. So when I tried to find anything about compassion in that book, there wasn't any. There really wasn't any. So it was a limited view also. I'll have to bring that into you all. It's a series of sayings that this carpenter, I think, in South America, Argentina, just wrote all through his life. The one that I memorized many years ago is, suffering is above, not below, and everyone thinks it's below, and everyone tries to rise, which always seemed very apt to me. That's a very good question, because we can get extremely snooty about Zen and think that Zen practice is, you know, our way is the only way. And that isn't, I don't think that's what he meant. It's just how we open ourselves up to the whole. And then open to the whole, we can see how everyone is that. Know, at least for a moment, at least now and then. And Zazen is a wonderful way of experiencing that. Lauren?
I don't think I can ask a question as good as James, but there was a point at which I got a little confused also, toward the end. He says, if you do not understand the reality directly through your master's words, he may use his staff on you. What is it, he may say? Our way is very direct. But this is not actually Zen, you know. It is not our traditional way. But when we want to express it, we find it easier sometimes to express it in this way. What is he talking about?
He's just talking about the Zen tradition of trying to wake people up, which is smacking them in the kisser or whacking them with a stick or doing some rude thing. That's an old Chinese tradition, really. And it only happened during a very short time, but it's famous because so much was made of it.
So we sort of say, this is not our traditional way.
Yeah, yeah. They used the kyosaku in Suzuki Roshi's time, because I just met somebody whom he hit. she didn't even ask for it. She was really quite shocked that he came and whacked her. And she didn't understand the use of it. You know, the use of it is to relax this muscle. But if you don't know, it seems like an attack. So he did use it. Coben did too in the beginning. In the very beginning he did. And it was wonderful. It feels great. Oh, if you've been sitting for 4 days and your shoulders are so tight and that muscle is just like this, and you can hear them coming around behind you, and at first it's really scary, you know, it's kind of ominous and you don't know what's going to happen, but then if you ask for it, then they rub it first with a stick, they rub exactly where they're going to hit, and that already feels good, and then they hit it right on that muscle, so it doesn't hurt, it just feels really good. And then do the other side, same thing, and hit it. And then all that energy just goes whoom, right down here and just settles back down in your belly. But as Coben said, the people who loved to get hit for the wrong reasons, and the people who loved to do the hitting for the wrong reasons, created a kind of unhealthy atmosphere, so he just put the stick away.
Is that why we don't do it?
Mm-hmm.
I think most groups and LA then some do.
Yes. Les does it, doesn't he?
I don't think so. Maybe sometimes.
Huh. Huh. They do it at San Francisco Zen Center on request.
Right.
Yeah, and Mount Baldy. I think Mount Baldy, they just whack them whether they ask or not. They're tough. It's all right, there's time. Talk fast.
In terms of communication, is it like, and you're feeling that the person is not open to you, in fact, maybe antagonistic. Is, what do you do with that barrier? I mean, it just seems, it makes you kind of like want to run.
Yeah, sometimes you have to run. It depends. Each situation is completely individual. There isn't any general rule about it because there's so many variables. You know, infinite number of variables when you really go into it. The other person's background, how their mind works, what they had for breakfast, what their level of education is. You know, they're just... You can't even begin to think about all the different things that go into each person's moment, yours and anybody else's. And so that's why it's so important for you to bring, for each one of us, to bring our whole self into each situation. Not just a piece of it, but the whole of it. Not in the way that makes us vulnerable, so that we get knocked over and over, but in a way that is honest and that other people can feel as honesty. But we have to protect ourselves, so there are times when we don't want to engage if somebody else is not willing to engage.
Sometimes this may not even be the option of running.
Well, that's true. That's true. And sometimes we find it's, we try to engage and then we find, oh, it's a mistake. But it could be that it's a mistake in that moment, but that starts something. If there's enough goodwill, you know, from your side, then it starts everything cooking. You know, it's what Shanti Deva said in the Dhammapada always. You know, you bring the positive into each situation and let it cook. You know, let it have its effect, our own positive nature. So that I know many situations that started out being extremely difficult and negative, that little by little, over time, begin to come around in some way. So that, you know, if the intention is there, then it begins to work out. Well, that's it. Always very short. Joseph the artist was complaining that our Tuesday evenings are too short.